Okay, so now we're on the file of Chazar de Poel. We're on page, let's pull this up. Here, page 51, where it says Sochar Leinamatan. And in the Chazar de Poel sheet. So what we want to discuss now is what are the remedies for a Poel who's Chozer B'Davar Ha'Aved. You know, until now we spent a lot of time defining Davar Ha'Aved, what is the conceptual basis of liability, these three different Chiyuvim, Nezek, Arev, Kinyan. Now I want to take a look at what are the specific remedies that the Halacha provides for when a Poel is Chozer B'Davar Ha'Aved. So in the Mishnah B'Metziyayin Vav Mebeis, the Mishnah tells us, if a Poel is Chozer B'Davar Ha'Aved, Socher Aleihen Omatan. That you can either deceive the Poelim, that's in the Mishnah, let me just make sure I'm getting that right. It's on the Mishnah, on Ayin Hei Mebeis. Yes, Socher Aleihen Omatan. And that's reiterated in the Brisa on Ayin Vav Mebeis. If it's a Davar Ha'Avod, you could either hire new workers and impose the cost on the Poelim who breached the Davar Ha'Avod, Omatan, or you could deceive the workers and promise to pay them more, when really, in fact, you'll only be liable for the agreed-upon, contracted-for amount. Ketzad Matan, Omer Lehen Selah Ketzatzti Lechem. Right, I'll say, oh, guys, I originally was only going to pay you $1 to get this job done, but Lushayim. Now I'll pay you double that if you stick around and don't withdraw. And in fact, you're only chayav to pay them the $1 amount. You're not liable to pay them the higher amount that you promised. Okay? That's the general idea of Matan. Socher Aleihen, the Gemara says, how much are you able to hire new workers? Ad kides tcharan. And you can impose that cost on the workers who breached. And then the Gemara tells us that there's an exception on Ayin Chesamid Aleph, that if somehow they deposited their working tools in your rishus, then you could hire new workers at their expense for an even greater amount. So within the Mishnah, we basically have two remedies, Socher Aleihen or Matan. And we see that there are two different shiurin within the Socher Aleihen remedy, depending on whether basa chavil liyada, whether you have some tools that were deposited in your rishus. Okay, so let's take a closer look first at this remedy of yachal lehatoso, this ability to deceive the worker. So here in the Shulchan Aruch and Simen Shin Lamed Gimel Hey, the Shulchan Aruch tells us keitzad matan omer lehen selah ketzatzi lechem bo tlu shtayim ad shiyigmru melachtan velo yitein lehem ela masha pasak tchila. And of course, you don't have to pay them the new amount that you promised. You only have to pay them the original contracted for amount. Va'afilu nasan lehem hashtayim machzir mehem hatosefes. Even if you prepaid this new amount that you lied you were going to pay them for, you can recover that from them. So let's say Yakir was going to work for me, and then he backs out. I say, oh, Yakir, I'll pay you $500,000 to finish the job. I give Yakir $500,000 in cash, prepaid to finish the job. I can now sue him in Beis Din to recover the $500,000 because he had a duty to perform at the original price. So even if I prepaid him, I could recover this amount. Now, why do you guys think that's the case? Why is Matan justified in this kind of a scenario? And why am I allowed to recover the amount that I prepaid? What's the reason for it? Happy to have somebody raise their hand if they want to pipe in, or I could just cold call. Silence. Ah, Yakir. Yakir, you have to yeah, good.
So maybe at least there's a why you can recover it. Maybe there's some assumption that, you know, assuming the original agreement is still in force, it cannot be superseded.
Yeah. I like that way of putting it. I would put it maybe slightly differently, but I think this is consistent with the idea you're suggesting. It's that because of the original agreement, the workers have an obligation to finish the job at that rate, right? And that obligation is not easily overridden, right? So unless there's some real new legitimate contract with Gemira's Das, the polim are obligated to work at the original contract price. And that duty just carries through, and it you know, it is not superseded by this kind of promise that was only stated to deceive them. Is that what you're getting at, Yakir?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Now, look, there is
a side. We need to understand why the deception is possible.
Why it's permitted?
Why it's permitted and what function it serves. Like, I would assume that the reason why it's permitted reveals kind of the nature of the chazara.
Well, I think the reason why, I would say that the reason why the deception is permitted is, the heter on lying is the same as the reason why the obligation is not easily superseded. Because the polim have a duty to finish the job at this rate. So it's permitted for you to kind of help them discharge and satisfy the duty that they already have. Right? So you're not deceiving them to do something that they wouldn't otherwise be obligated to do. You're just deceiving them in order to do what they're supposed to be doing. It's like a kofa no so achi yom rotza ani. But this is not based off some deep down rut zone. It's just based off some certain deep down chiyuv. I mean, the Pisgei Choshen here in the footnote says, mashma shemuter l'shak every makom hefsid mamon v'tzarachiyin. I guess he's trying to figure out if there's a general principle here that it's always mutter to lie whenever there is hefsid mamon and leaves a b'tzarachiyin. I would say it's not so much that it's
social norms.
Yeah, I would say it's not. It's not so much that there's a het there l'shaker b'makom hefsid mamon. Rather, the idea is that it's mutter l'shaker when the guy has an obligation to see this job through, and your sheker is just there to help him satisfy that obligation. So I think the Pisgei Choshen here is actually wrong to phrase this in such broad terms. It's not a heter l'shaker b'makom hefsid mamon. It's a heter l'shaker to help the guy satisfy the chiyuv that he undertook. I saw there were two hands, so Donnie.
To defend the Pisgei Choshen a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I was wondering that we were only viewing it as a duty. Why can't you view it more as actually the poem are causing damage now to you?
And that justifies a heter l'shaker?
Yeah, meaning you, because since you were supposed to pay, the Baal was supposed to pay X amount, once that exceeds the deal already, anything above that is going to be damage to you because you weren't supposed to pay that.
But why is there a heter l'shaker anytime you have a hefsid mamon?
Well, I think maybe it's like the case we had last year, like with in Bava Kamma, where what's it called,
the trespassing,
the
positive rights that you have, that
the animals coming into your rishus, you're allowed to kill it,
right?
Before it. So you're allowed to do proactive steps to get rid of the damage that could happen.
Yeah.
And I think it's exemplified by the fact that since you can recover, even if you gave, and it seems like it's almost like a kinyan happened, you gave the money on this fake agreement, that shows that since you can get that money back, that shows that there's some sort of hefsed mamon or damage happening here.
Yeah, this is a really interesting point. I guess what Donnie's suggesting, so my reading is to say that the heter l'shaker and what allows you to lie and recover the prepaid amount that you gave the guy has to do with the worker's obligation to see the job through, right? And Donnie's suggesting, no, maybe it's really a separate idea of the halacha gives you a certain latitude in preventing someone from doing a maisa nezek, right? Or I would say from preventing yourself from suffering hefsed mamon, right? Yeah. I guess maybe a nafka mina here is, see, for me, it's critical that the poel would be doing you a wrong by breaching, right? He'd be breaching his duty to you, he'd be violating his chiyuv, and that's what allows you l'shaker to keep him in line in upholding his duty. Donnie, in your formulation, it sounds like you want to say it's the mere fact that it's like the Torah gives you certain rights in protecting your property that allows you to lie in this case.
Yeah, like the case of the Rambam, the killing the animal.
Yeah, but remember the Rambam, in the Rambam's case, and I think it's in this case, Mamon Parakeh, if I remember that correctly, the Rambam said the reason why you're allowed to preemptively kill the animal with trespassing, and that's presumably going to destroy your property, is because it's usur ligrom hanezek. It's prohibited for the owner of those animals to allow his animal to cause harm. And so in that case also, it sounds like it's really the breach of his duty that allows you to preemptively seize the stuff. And I'm saying by analogy here, correct. Here by analogy also, it's the breach of the worker's obligation to finish the job at a certain, at the agreed upon rate that justifies your lying. So yeah, there is a nice parallel, but I would say parallel for the reasons that I was getting at. Not the mere hefsid mamon, which is how the Pesachei Choshen makes it seem. Yeah, good comment, Donnie. Thank you. Yoni.
Well, 2 points. I think Donnie's suggestion was interesting, but I guess one of the problems also with we saw with regard to what exactly was the Davar HaAvod. We saw like very, very expansive views of Davar HaAvod, like wedding ceremonies or like anytime my full daf wasn't accomplished.
Yeah.
Which I think would have a very hard time explaining Donnie's model of like any property loss to expand to, you know, these type of like farther out cases.
You're saying even the Pesachei Choshen's formulation would be problematic there, right? Because Sochar Le'Namatan is not just for Hefsid Mamon, right? It's the Mishnah says it with respect to the Sochar Chalilin for the Mace and the Kala, right?
So, yeah, I mean, we saw a bunch of formulations that seem to be very, very expansive to what exactly is defined right. as Davar HaAvod.
That's right. So,
defend myself for in the Pesachei Choshen for a second. Well, I think he's... But this only gets triggered once you say that you're going to have you're going to pay the person double the amount. That's I think where the hefsed mamon is coming in.
Well, so Donnie, suppose that I was going to hire this band to play at the wedding tonight, and there's nobody else to hire anymore, and I say, you know what, if you guys play, I'll give you $1 million if you don't back out. Or easier case, right? I hire Noah to play at the wedding. He looks like he's part of like Soul Farm or something, like the way he's dressed over here. And then somebody else says, "No, I want you to play at my wedding. I'll double whatever Rosenzweig is paying you," right? And so I say, "You know what, Noah? I'll double what they're going to pay you," right? Which was double what I was going to originally pay you. So I think, right, I would basically pay you 4 times my original rate. And that induces Noah to finish the job by me. And then I'm only chayav to pay him the original amount, right? So it's not like I was going to suffer any hefsed mamon. Maybe it's embarrassing that I was going to have a wedding without a band or something. But it's not like there's no other band to hire. So it's not like I was going to suffer any out-of-pocket costs. It's really just suffering the busha of having a wedding without a band.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear Yoni's point and your point. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but there still is the duty, right? Once there's the contract, once there's the agreement with Noah, he has the obligation to see it through, even though it's not causing hefsed mamon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. Yoni, you have your hand up again, so go for it, Yoni.
Yeah, so just like a second point, if I wonder like what the limit against this question is, as in, let's say I sign a shtar with the guy, like a new contract,
yeah.
Do we still make the same or opinion? Is it still true that I can't?
It's a good question. Meaning, we know that you could always replace a pre-existing kinyan. I guess you would say if there's very clear, how clear does the Gemara's Das have to be? Right? So when I tell Noah, I'll double what they're paying, double of what I originally offered you. If we sign like a new agreement, would that be sufficient? Right? Or does the fact that Noah wasn't allowed to be Chozer B'Davar HaAved, does that vitiate any superseding contract that we intend to make, right, Yoni?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's...
really interesting question. I guess it depends on how seriously we take this idea of the fact that the POEL has no right to back out. If having no right to back out means that he is under like this strong duty to complete the job at the original rate, then maybe it like can't be superseded at all or something, right? Unless like we explicitly, I release him. Maybe I'd have to explicitly release him, be mochel the original contract and replace it with a new one, right? Maybe it would have to work through that kind of a mechanism. Yakir, you had the formulation in the beginning about he has a duty to perform, and so maybe it can't be superseded. Do you have thoughts on Yoni's question?
Not yet. I might at some point.
Okay, waiting for it to fall into your mind. But Yoni, I think that's a really good point. I do think you could always use the mechanism of explicitly being mochel the first obligation and replacing it with a second one, but that's like a, you know, kind of an extravagant way of doing it. One makar that will take a stand on Yoni's point is this ritva on the bottom of page 51. So this is not the regular ritva, this is the miyuchas ritva, supposedly Provençal. It's almost this ritva gets a little pilpulish in places, and this long piece here, I only took out a part of it, is one example of this. Basically, the ritva here wants to know, why do we need the Gemara here to, this Miuchas L'Ritva wants to know, why does the Gemara in our sugya have to tell us that you could be mata the poalim to get them to finish the job? After all, we already know from Bava Kamma, which we discussed earlier in the year, remember the ferry case? Haya boreach mi beis ha'asurin, v'haya ma'boras l'fana, v'yomer tol dinar v'hevi rani, in li'el l'scharo. Right, if I'm running away from somebody who's trying to harm me, and there's a ferry, and I need to cross the river, and I tell the ferry guy, I'll give you $1 million to help me get across the street. Remember, he could only recover the going market rate for that kind of a service, right? He doesn't get the supposed agreed upon amount, in well ascaro. And so the ritva says, well, isn't this just the same principle, right? The ferry guy, let's say, had some obligation to provide the service at the going rate, or there's not enough Gemira's Das. So then wouldn't you say the same thing over here? Hacha dechazu dematzila fushe ba'agrayu. That he's not going to be bound by this new amount that he promised the workers. So what's interesting is that the Ritva here seems to be assuming that these two sigyas are related to each other. They both kind of turn on some general theory of mishata nibacha. That, you know, I was just messing around, and so there's no Gemiras Das for this contract amount. The related to that observation is something at the Pisrei Choshen sites, and he points out that in that sugya Bereach Mi Beis HaAsurim, where you could say, oh, I was messing around when I said I'd pay you the $1 million, that's, and you'll recall this from our discussion then, that's only if you didn't prepay the guy. But if you prepaid the ferryman and said, here is $1 million to get me across the river, you can't recover it. Right, so this is where the Shulchan Aruch quotes in Siman Reis Lamech Daled, Mishahaya Borechim Beis Asurim, etc. So you could only say that you're Mishatabo and not obligated to pay the amount, Bishalo Nasanlo, Aval, Nasanlo, Becholi Ladvarim, Enu Yachal Hotzia Miyado. The Pisrei Choshen points out that that's inconsistent with the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch in our Sugya in Siman Shin Lamed Gimel. In Shin Lamed Gimel, the Shulchan Aruch said, Afilu Nasan Lahem Ashtayim, even if I paid Noah the quadruple amount in advance, Machzer mehematosefas, I could sue him to recover. So the Pisrei Choshen points out that these ideas seem to be in tension with each other. That b'shut chikrei lev hikshe mehad dekaimlam b'simin reis lamachdalad shelachar shenasan ein tainas hashta. Once you actually pay the money, you can no longer claim that you weren't serious. Imkein gamenido didan, if I prepay Noah, kiven shekvar nasan lahem lamachayevan lahachzer. So I think what this shows is that either the Miuchas L'Ritva is wrong to try to bring these two sugyas together. Maybe the reason why you don't have to pay the ferry guy the agreed upon exorbitant amount is because there's no Gemiras Das, whereas our sugya is not about Gemiras Das. Our sugya is that the Paul had a duty to perform. He had a duty to finish the job. Or maybe the Ritva is right if the two sugyas go together, and maybe the ferry guy had a duty to get you across to help save your life or something, like some Rishonim in that sugya suggest. But to answer the Chikri Leivs question, there are really two different levels of duties. So maybe if you just have like a general duty to help somebody out, then that could be overridden by some sort of prepaid quasi-kinyan, which will now bind you to pay the prepaid kinyan amount. But in our sugya, the obligation of a poel to finish through a job, to see a job that he was contracted for through to its completion, is a stronger kind of obligation, and that prohibits or that blocks these kinds of prepaid kinyanim from overriding it. So my point here is that either you see from this distinction that the chiyuv of a poel to see a job through to its completion is stronger than the kind of chiyuv that appears in that sugya in Bava Kama Bereach Beis Asurim, or that it has a different conceptual basis. Maybe that sugya is about mishata nibacha, and this sugya is not based off mishata bacha, it's based off this idea of having a duty to see the job through to its end. Okay. Anybody have thoughts on that little sub-discussion? Any hands? I see Noah doesn't have no. Okay.
Want to get paid.
Well, yeah, you want to get paid. You got to learn how to play the drums. Wearing the uniform is not enough. Yeah. Donnie Ritholtz, raise his hand.
What's it called? So why would a general duty be so weak?
Yeah. I think intuitively the idea is that, look, we all have a general obligation to save other people when they're in trouble. But that's kind of like a general obligation, and it's hard to see how it applies in each case, right? So, you know, it's a background chiyuv that I have, and it's enough to obligate me to save you. But maybe like a specific contract between parties is strong enough to override some generic background duty. Whereas in our case, it's like, oh, we had a specific contract for me to perform at this rate, and it's harder to override that. Mm-hmm. That's the intuition.
Like, to me, it seems almost like a fetish that like the person would have to pay at all. Like, once you have the chiyuv of like lo tama del dam reyach or whatever, yeah, the chiyuv, like why does he have to be paid at all? So then we say, no, he's paid at least what his the going rate is.
Yeah, I think the answer to that question is that I think when we looked at the sugya earlier in the year, we saw that he doesn't have a duty to provide it for free. He has a duty to provide it at the going market rate.
Yeah, just by what I'm saying is like that seems to be like a little bit of a chiddush, which then makes this even a bigger chiddush that if you do pay the person, then he gets to keep it. I hear
you're saying that you're basically trying to argue that it's not obvious that the chiyuv lo samar adam reyach is just a general, like a generic background duty.
Yeah, it's right. An assumption. It's definitely an right. Assumption.
Yeah, I hear that. My just trying to make sense of the Shulchan Aruch and balance the Makoros. I'll say, well, the answer's got to be that there is this distinction, and that Kamash Malan, that it is a weaker background obligation as opposed to like a specific contract that was agreed upon between the parties. Right. Yeah. Okay, good. Can you guys see me, or is it too dark in my house right here?
We can see it.
Yeah. Let me see. I'm just going to turn on this.
That Torah is actually creating a Ken or Panah.
I'm going to turn on the light here and see if I get a better... But now you see less of Marion Station behind me. You know? You can see it. There you go. A little bit of a tour of the neighborhood. Here's the greenhouse. Okay. Good. Now I want to get into that's it for the Matehu, of being able to deceive the workers to get them to finish the job. The other half of the Mishnah tells us that you could also be Socher Alehen, that you could hire new workers and impose the cost on the workers who breached. And again, we'll talk separately about Basa Chavili Yado. If they deposited their tools, then you could even hire for a greater amount. So there's a very important machlokas we've shown him here about Socher Alehen. The Gemara itself on Ayin Chesamid Aleph says, Ad kama socher aleyen, how much could you hire new workers at? Am Rav Nachman ad kadei scharan. So up until the amount of the schar that you hired the workers, the original workers for. So what does this mean, ad kadei scharan? So did anybody see the machlokas between Rashi and the other Rishonim? Anybody have a handle on it yet? So Rashi yeah, here.
We saw that.
Oh yeah, good, Gabe.
Rashi says that you can use wages that you've already that he's already earned towards the Sochar land, towards paying other employees, hiring other employees. The other Rishonim seem to say that you can pay up until the contracted wage, which would be double the rate of wage that you
cost. Yeah, very good. Now, and Rashi even seems to be a little more limited than that. Rashi says, "Ad kedei scharan im asu etzlo ktsas hamalacha." So suppose the workers who breached did some work for me, velo kiblu klum, but I had not yet paid them. All right. So Gabe, you see Rashi seems to be going even further and saying, if I owe them money, but I had not yet paid them, then sochar alehen kol mashu chayev lahen yosef la'achirim v'yigmaru. So let's say I was going to pay Gabe $100 to do the whole job, and he did half the job, but I had not yet paid him for any of it. So how much can I deduct from Gabe to cover my cost of the new workers? $50, right? Meaning I don't have to pay Gabe anything to cover my new worker costs. But suppose Gabe did $50 of work, but I already paid him $25 of it. How much am I chayiv? How much am I able to deduct now from his salary to pay new workers? Gabe?
$25.
Yeah. So that's right. So Rashi here seems to be saying that it's only if I didn't pay Gabe that I can now subtract the amount that I owe him but had not paid him and reallocate that to cover my new worker expenses. So Rashi here is actually very limited, right? It's really a low kiblu klum. Does anybody have a question on Rashi? Does anybody find Rashi problematic for some reason or other? Anybody know what the problem with Rashi is? So you'll see some Rishonim think that according to Rashi, it's very difficult to see what the distinction is between a Dabar HaAvod case, where you're allowed to be Sochar Leinu Matan, and a regular case of Chazara, according to Rabbi Dosa, where it's Yad Pol Al Tachtona. Because remember, the standard case of Yad Pol Al Tachtona, according to Rabbi Dosa, is just that you can first cover your new expenses and deduct your new expenses from any amount that you owe your earlier workers. So it seems to come out that according to Rashi, Socha Aleinu Matan B'Davar HaAved is almost identical with Rabbi Dosa's Yad Pol Al Tachtona theory. Yeah, does that you hear that problem?
I mean, you could answer both Matan would be an Afkamina and maybe Mandam or Kofin
would be an Afkamina. That's true. Those would be Afkamina. But within Sochar Aleihen, you're right that there doesn't seem to be a... Within Sochar Aleihen, it seems like you want to bite the bullet and say there doesn't have to be an Afkamina there. We'll see what some Rishonim tried to suggest for Rashi. Either the Rush is very unhappy with this. You could see the Rush quotes Rashi. He says, "Pirish Rashi Adma Shebalabayis Tafus Mischaron." Right, the Balabayis could only deduct whatever he's holding on to from their wages. The Rush disagrees, and he says the real pshat is Biyesh Mefarshin BeKefel Scharo Kedamina BeMekachtos Ad Kedei Demeyan. The Gemara, when it comes to Mekachtos, sometimes uses the same phrase of Ad Kedei Demeyan to mean there's life up to the full value of the original contract, right? So the idea here is not that I can deduct whatever wages I haven't paid yet, but rather it means that the worker is liable to cover my costs up to the value of his contract. So suppose I already paid the Poel $100. Let's say the job was worth $100 and he worked $50 of the job, and I paid him those $50 already. So I could actually hold him liable for up to, you know, the $100 amount that he was going to get paid for whatever I have to pay the new workers. And I could obviously claw back the $50 that I gave him. So the point is that if I end up paying workers double the amount that I was going to pay this guy, I can fully recover my extra costs from the worker that breached. So the worker, so a way to think of this is a worker is liable to cover the cost that you have from his breach, but capped at the full value of his contract. So if his contract was worth $100, his liability will be capped at $100. Yoni raised his hand. Yoni, let me stick your hand to one question. Let me just get the whole view of the rush out. The rush brings a raya from the Yushalmi. It's a bit of a cryptic raya, where the Yushalmi says that B'davar Ha'aved, you could say, you could sofer leinu matan, so it said, what's matan? Omer lehen sela katsatsi lechem bo tlishnayim. Oh, no tell me zeb and no sein lezeb. I think the raya from the Yushalmi is supposed to be that you can now take money away from the po'alim and give it to the new workers. You could take it away from the worker who breached and give it to the new workers, whereas according to Rashi, you would never be allowed to take away from what the original workers did. You could just withhold payment that you owe them. You can never claw back. So that's the machlokas between the Rush and Rashi. The Rush thinks he has a raya from the Yushalmi that the Poalim are liable up to the value of their contract. Yoni.
Yeah, wait, so if we go over the numbers for a second. So you think, let's say the numbers aren't half-half, but say the worker did, you know, it's a $100 job and the worker did $30 worth.
Right.
Right, so the remainder is worth $70, but he can only find other workers that are working for a lot more.
Right.
So you think he can only get paid up to 100, or like say up to double would be like up to 140? Like what do you think the rush is cheating here? I'm a little bit confused what the double means.
I think it means that he could collect up to $100 from the Poel who breached.
So it's it's up to the worth of the contract.
I think so. That's right.
So the double is not significant. You don't think it means more that he could take up to double the rest of the contract, up to 200?
Right. I don't think it means that because the Russian language, Vieshmar Bekefel Scharo. Right? So the way I understand that is that the Poel will be liable to lose his full schar, right? Meaning he'd be liable to, he's basically accepting liability for the Balabais hiring workers up to double the schar of his contract. Okay? So I take that to mean, so suppose, Yoni, you hired me to do a job for $100 and I did no work. Okay? But I breached and now you have to pay somebody $200 for the job. So I think the idea is that I'm liable to compensate you up to $100. Because, look, you're going to shell out $100. That's not a loss. That's what you're going to pay me anyway, right? So that's not really an out-of-pocket loss based off my breach. So I'm not getting any money here. Your net loss is $100, and that's what I'm liable to cover. That's how I view it. Same if you hired me for $100, I did $50 worth of work. And then you have to hire workers to finish it. Let's say for $100 to complete the job, right? So I think I would be chayiv to forfeit the $50 that I was entitled to get for half my job, right? And I'd have to cover whatever else you're out of pocket for, right? So I'd be chayiv up to $100. That's the way I view it. It could be that I'm misunderstanding it, but that's the way I understand Ad Kedei Kevel Scharon. Do you think there's a reading, and there's a question for everybody, do you think there's a reading here that suggests that the POEL could be liable to actually pay out of pocket double the value of his contract? Meaning,
that's how I understood it. I mean, I think the SMA and maybe the SHAH could take your reading, but I think the simple reading, I mean, it sounds like he's taking your time at double. He didn't work at that thing, he didn't work at all.
Right.
The war object was worth $100. He cannot pay up to $200.
Meaning, that's so let's say,
into right.
So here's the case. Let's say the Balabais hires, the original contract was worth $100. The Balabais now hires workers for $300, right? So his net losses are
two. So you could take 200.
Right. That's how you want to read that. That's how you want to read
VH. But I think that's what the proof from Ona is. That's because it's not the case, so it's worth Ona. And I think that's what the argument from Yerushalmi is, that it's not the Lechem, both Lushnai, take two. And then either you take it, or no same as that, or you take from that person and the two, and you give it to him.
I'm not sure how the Raya from the Yishalmi, the way I understand the Raya from the Yishalmi is just from this last phrase. Oh, no, tell me Zev and no, say me Zev, which shows contra Rashi that you could actually claw back payments that were already made to the breaching party. Whereas for Rashi, you can never claw back payments. You can just deduct money that's owed. That's how I understand the Raya from the Yishalmi. So the Yishalmi doesn't really take a stand on Kefel Scharan. The Raya from the Yishalmi is just the no tell me Zev, and that's why the Rashi says, Ulfi Rashi im kvar parlan lo yitol mehen masha asu. So I understand the Yishalmi did have to be a little more limited. Let me see.
The Yishalmi was specifically talking about not just the agreement with Rashi, but also the fact that he was buttressing his point about double.
Right.
But the example the Yishalmi gives is specifically where you both are mata him, they give two instead of one, Dela, and then, or you take from one and give the other, meaning you take the two from that Poel and give the other Poel.
Right, so that's not how I'm interpreting the Yishalmi. I saw you sent me that there's a Tosefta. I wasn't sure. Is the Tosefta difference really only on your reading, right?
Yeah, but that's the only difference on my reading, yeah.
Right. So I think it's difficult to read the Yishalmi the way you're reading it. Let me just point out, in the Onah Sugya, the Onah Sugya says that there are certain things that are hard to evaluate, like a Sefer Torah and diamonds. They don't have Onah at the usual amount of a sixth, but they do have Onah ad kedei de mehen, meaning if you price gouge up to 100% at 100% of the value, right? Meaning keflayim. So if Sefer Torah is worth $30,000 and I sell it to you for $60,000, that would be Onah for a Sefer Torah. So that's why I think our case also is talking about a case, and the Rush explicitly appeals to this Gemara in Bamitzian and Chesav, Ad Kedei Demeim, as the paradigm for defining Ad Kedei Demeim in our Sugya. So that's why I think it means that the Poelim would be on the hook, their liability would be up to the value of their contract. And Kefel, what the Rishon, that phrase that the Yishonim use, like the Rush says, Vish Mefarshim BeKefel Scharo, means the amount that's being paid to the new workers, right? But the amount being paid to the new workers is really a net loss for the Balabais of the full value of the original contract, not double the value of the original contract. Does everybody follow that? If not, feel free to raise your hand.
No.
Or no. Okay, Yoni, you wanna explain that to Noah, the issue here?
The basic disagreement is, let's take the simple case. Let's say where the you hired a worker to clean a job, which costs $100. And then the worker didn't do any work. And then he reneged on his work. And then you found new workers that cost $300. So now, according to Itamar's reading, based on, I think the other firms seem to agree, is that he effectively lost you a total of $100. So now he owes you that $100, and then you have to pay out of pocket, I guess, the rest of it, the $200.
Right. Well, he caused you caused you a $200 loss. He's only liable for up to the value of his contract, though.
Yeah, he's only about, exactly. My reading, though, says that he's liable up to $200, up to double his contract.
Right.
So he would owe 200, and we're going to do another 100.
Right. Meaning
yeah, I got that. I got Itamar's correct reading in your Farfetch'd reading, but no, I didn't get the Ad Kadeh de Mayhem part.
Wow.
I'm just kidding, Yanni. I love you.
Okay, so the you put on the tzemer tzitzis and you're dishing it out. You know, it's like the charifas. So I think that the issue here actually stems from the language of the Gemara. So the Gemara said, Socharle and ad kama socharle and ad kedei scharon, right? So I think that works towards my reading, meaning the liability of the worker is up to the amount of his schar, right? And when the Rishonim use this phrase kefel, they mean that you could hire new workers for up to double the value of the original guy, which means the original guy will be on the hook for your net losses, which is the value of his contract. Right? That's what I think is going on here. But Yoni's reading this, maybe kefel schara means the liability actually could be up to kefel schara. Right? But I think it's more difficult to read with the Gemara, which says, ad kama sochale and ad kidei scharan. Right? Yoni, you hear my reading of the Gemara?
Yeah, but I think the argument is that the Rishonim then would say Akide Scharan always refers to double.
Yeah.
On Ona.
Yeah. Let's look at the Torah. Maybe the Torah's language works well with the Oni. The Torah in Shin Lamed Gimel says, Kol Masha Mosef Le'elu Yeser Al Masha Pasak Im HaRishonim Notel Me HaRishonim Afilu Ad Kide HaKefel Haschar HaRishonim. Some misplaced hay, it looks like, no? Shouldn't be two hays there. Kind of weird. But Yoni, what do you guys think of this formulation of the tour? It sounds like it's you could be no tel mer harishonim, afilu ad kidei hakefel haschar harishonim. What does that sound like to you guys?
What came before?
Sounds like my reading.
Yeah, it sounds like Yoni's reading. Unless I don't know what came before the tour.
Yeah.
And the tour is presumably the most accurate representation of the rush. I suggest.
Well, here actually at KFL. Here in my tour, here it actually says, just change this to Ada KFL. Mishar Harishonim. Not that that really matters. Oh, wait. That does matter. No? Ad kideha kefel. So, anything that you add to these new guys, you could take from the original contract. Even up to double the amount. No. I think this works with Yoni, right?
Yeah, it works with Yoni.
I think it means that you could take up to double the value of the contract of the first guys from the first guys. Somebody agree with that reading of the tour? Which would imply that they're liable up to double the value of their contract. And so if their contract is worth $100, their liability would go up to $200. Yakir, do you agree with that reading?
Yeah, I think it'd go either way.
Okay.
I don't think it's so clear.
Gabe, you have thoughts on this?
I'm leaning towards Yoni, but not.
Okay. Anybody else? Let's see. Ben, thoughts on this? Let's see if we get Ben to. Benjamin?
I'm good.
You're good? All right.
Can we just explain. Is this liability going to be in addition to the Rashi type liability of that you can deduct whatever they've done already?
Yes.
Or is it just?
Yes, I think so. I think it means that. I think it means that. No. No, I think it means that the full liability that they have is going to be capped at the value of their contract.
So if they agree to do work for $100 and they've done 80% of it,
right?
So
they would lose. They would lose.
They will not be liable for. You can now withhold that 80 and also sue them for another 20.
Right. That's my sense. Although I think definitely Yoni disagrees. And I could hear, even if you don't go as far as Yoni, you could say that it's an addition to Rashi, right? Firstly, you could deduct whatever you were going to pay them, like under just the general idea of Yad Pol Al Tachtona. And above that, you could actually make them go into the negative up to the value of their contract. I could hear that suggestion, which is what you were suggesting, Yakir, right?
Right. I think that's very possible. I think you could also maybe even go the other way and say, like, in that case, they're only going to be liable for 40. It's only double whatever their scar would have been for the portion that they were negging on.
See, I don't hear that, because I think the way the Rishonim understand this, we'll see, like, it seems like they think that this number comes from the original contract stipulation. It's like how much you were going to pay them originally. That's what determines the amount of their liability. So it really wouldn't depend on how much performance they did. It really depends on what the original bargain was for. That's my sense, Yakir.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see a few more formulations, and let me know what you think of from these formulations. So thus...
A quick question on the Rosh.
Sure.
One of the reasons I think Rashi's opinion is compelling about whether or not you can cloud back payment to use your language.
Yeah.
Is the Gemara about in Bas Kavila Lo Yadel.
Yeah.
Rashi seems consistent with the Gemara's phrasing there that whatever of money you have over there is in your possession, that's what you can use to compensate your losses. But you wouldn't be able to pocket.
Yeah, it's a nice idea. I think the counter argument to that is to distinguish between, so ad kedei kefel scharan, like the Rush will say, ad kedei kefel scharan, ad kedei scharan is even without ba'chavil yado. Ba'chavil yado is when you're trying to go beyond the amount that's justified by ad kedei scharan.
I see.
Right, that's so I don't know that you could point from Basa Chavil Yada, which implies some degree of Tfisa, and then project that onto the earlier line in the Gemara about the liability of Akate Scharan. Right?
Okay.
Yeah,
right. Do you think that's where Rosh is coming from?
I'm not sure, actually. I'll look back at it, but it's hard to know what's motivating Rosh, other than he kind of is... I mean, one thing that's clear is he's trying to limit the liability that the Poel has in Davar HaAved, right? So he doesn't think that there are strong reasons here to be Mechayev him. It just limits his liability in some... Sorry, it's just that he could be deprived of schar that's owed to him. Right? So I'll have to figure out why Rashi would limit it that. I think Rashi's motivated more by the conceptual idea of Davar HaAved than by like the linguistic structure of the Gemara.
Okay.
But I'll try to offer a reason for that a little later on.
Machlok at you and Rabbi Dr. Ari Bergman.
Right. Have to get traction on the machlokas. Look here at the Sma in Shin Lamed Gimel Chaf Hei. So the Sma quotes the Rush and the Tur as disagreeing with Rashi. He cites himself, and then he explains their position. He says, "Rosh Lomar b'shir schirus shebo litol mi bal habayis kishayigmru hamalacha." So, at the amount of schirus that they would have received from the bal habayis had they finished the malacha, but also shir gamru lehaknosam lebal habayis litain mikisam. So So what do you think is going on here in the Smaz formulation? What's he getting at? He's trying to explain the rush on the tour, why the poel is liable up to kefil mischar rishonim.
It seems similar to the case of like an uman, that as soon as the uman, like the uman gets the object to work on, like it becomes his, and then he has to, reacquire, the original owner has to reacquire it back, in the sense that as soon as the workers enter the contract, they now have a duty to the Baal HaBayit for the entirety of their work. And once they finish it, so then that duty is somehow like reversed.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting way of putting it. So you're saying that up to the amount that they were contracted for, right? But also so up to the amount of the contract price that they were going to receive from the Baal HaBayit, to that amount, they had das lahakno sum. Who's the subject of lahakno sum? Sorry, what's the object of lahakno sum? So it's here the poalim, right? Are the subject. What's the object? What's the thing that's being nikne to the Baal HaBayit?
I think it's like a personal responsibility.
Yeah, like lahaknos es atzmam.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I think he's getting. Yeah, right. I think that's what he's saying. Lebal HaBayis litain mikisam de im yachshu behen v'yisarech l'skar po'al ha'machirim ligmar malachto. I think Noah has a nice way of putting it here, that when we interpret the contract, so we say they were going to get paid $100 for the job, and so part of the kinyan is that they are makne themselves, or they create some liability in themselves to ensure that the job is finished for $100, right? Such that they'll be willing to go on the hook for that amount. I think Noah's analogy here to Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli is actually very apt. So he's saying that once we evaluate the contract at $100, then that means the Poelim have a liability up to that amount to see the contract through to its completion. And that's like the Baal HaBayit has a property right in them to see it through to that, to ensure that they complete it for that amount. Is that the idea, Noah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So first of all, I think that's conceptually very interesting, because that tells us that it sounds like this is part of the kinyan, right? This is just part of the contract that it generates this reciprocal liability in the poelim. But secondly, does this take a stance on Yoni's question about how much their liability is for? What do you guys think? Oh, I see there's a hand. Yoni, you have a hand.
Yeah, I just disagree on the read. I mean, like, maybe you can read it that way. I think the much simpler way of reading it is that the Oto Shir Gamul Hakim Otama, they were magna that amount of money. And then the way I envision this working, according to, like, the Sma and other Chonim, is it's similar, I guess, to, like, they go to a hotel, so they'll, the room costs $100 a night, you're there for one night. So they might charge you $200 just as, like, a precaution. And then they'll return you the money afterwards.
Yeah.
So the way I envision it is that effectively when you start working for someone, so you are makna to them that amount of money. And the lahak no tam refers to the money. Oso shir gamru lahak no tam about
you. Yeah. Oso shir gamru lahak no. It's just like you're saying. This is just like a deposit or something.
Yeah, it's like a or it's like a rather a makna that deposit, but if the time or the need comes.
And to lahakno sum is like the demea schiras. That's the object of that's being.
Yeah.
And so it's not this way. It's not like intrinsic to the contract. It's just some external hisaivus. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's like part of like the Torah contract. This is just like the way it works. But yeah, I think it's.
But it's less, I guess, another, the nafka mina is whether we think that there's like a primary hischaivus, and that they're being makne themselves to finish the job with like a penalty up to the value of their contract, or whether they're just being mischayev of themselves to pay like a secondary damages in case of breach, right?
Yeah, I don't see that being like a necessary read. I think it's, the simpler read is it's just not getting money.
Ah. Do the rest of you have thoughts on the proper reading here, or what the SMA is getting at? I don't see any hands. Anyone have anybody want to weigh in to adjudicate?
Benjamin, what you got?
Yeah, I'm not sure. But what do you think is the amount that they're on the hook for? I think the SMAS formulation makes it sound like it's just literally the value of their contract, not double. By contra Yoni's earlier point. Divishir Shira Shabo Litami Balabayas, but also Shir Gamrul Haknos on the Balabayas. And this also takes a stance on Yakir's point. It's really just if I was going to be contracted for $100, that's the amount of my liability. Yakir.
Yeah, I don't think it takes a stance on my point at all, actually. I think it's totally agnostic as to my point.
Okay. Why?
It's not clear if it's talking about their is the shear, is the remaining shear at that point, meaning do we view the contract all as one piece, or do we reevaluate it? You know, do we evaluate it at the point they're closer? I don't think it's clear from this formulation which way that should go.
You're saying this formulation would only be with respect to how much you could dip into their pocket for. But there might be a separate principle that allows you to deduct whatever you owe them. Is that your point, Akir?
Yeah, I mean, he says "lite nikisam" if you take that literally.
Yeah. Okay, so that if that's true, if Yakir's point is correct here, then it would tell us that there would be like two different dinim going on here in the liability of a poel hachozer b'davar haaved. There would be one din of liability "lite nikisam," which is based off this idea of the sma, but also shir gamrul haknosam, etc., and maybe some separate other principle that explains why you could claw back what you already gave them or what you owe them. Is that right, Yakir?
Or it could be the same principle. I'm not sure why do you assume that it's two different principles?
Because when he explained the line in the Gemara of Ad Kedei Kefel Mischar Rishonim, sounds to me like that's fully exhausted by the reason that he gives in the next line.
Yeah, right? This reason could apply to clawing back also, meaning the liability is up to the Poelim suffering a loss of $100 because that was the value of the contract and that's what they agreed upon at the beginning. And we don't necessarily reevaluate how much they've done so far to recalculate that loss. That's the benchmark we set at the beginning, and it's the same benchmark throughout.
But I thought you were saying that you could dip into their pockets ad kedei scharan, in addition to clawing back whatever money is owed to them. Wasn't that your point earlier, Yakir?
We can dip into their pockets up to, maybe formulate it this way, if we dip into their pockets up to, we can, they're liable to up to whatever assets they have right now, minus the value of the contract. And that's all explained by this.
We could dip into whatever assets they have right now.
I don't think I'm explaining myself clearly.
You're not.
Okay.
But you could hold off and you could maybe you want to...
Yeah. I think the onus would be on you to explain why it has to be 2 dinim.
Okay.
I'm not sure I understand why it has to be 2 dinim, but we can
yeah, we could revisit that. Let me just make take two more minutes to wrap up this discussion. We'll pick up at this in the next chabura. The Rambam in Schiras Parak Tes writes Ketzad Socher Le and Socher Poalim Acherim veGomrim Melachtan Shelo Tovad veChol Sheyo. Here's the crucial line: Chol SheYosef LeElo Poalim Acherim Al Mashe Pasak LeRishonim Notel Min HaRishonim. So how much do you think the Rambam thinks the original Poelim are on the hook for? Kol sheyosef le'elu apolim achirim amasha pasak l'rishonim notalman harishonim. Ad kama ad kedei scharan shel rishonim. So I think the Rambam's formulation is very clear that the liability is capped at the value of the contract against Yoni's reed, right? Meaning, ad kedei scharan shel rishonim is the maximum liability that the original poelim would have. So as the Hagos HaMaimonis points out, the Rambam here is also against Rashi because afilim nasan lehem scharan tzrichin lahachzir ad kedei sheyuchal lahaskir poelim acherim. So the Rambam allows you to claw back. It's just capped at ad kedei scharan. Yoni, you have a hand.
Yeah, I would say that actually I think the Rambam's even more than what you're saying. I think it's actually closer to what Yakir was suggesting earlier, and that it's only mostly if we are adding on to the original contract. So if like Yakir's case where you finished, they finished 80% of the work and the rest of the work is only in theory worth $20, right? But now then these new workers are only going to charge for like $80 for the $20 worth of work. So now you can only take from their money 60, right? 620 more than you would have otherwise paid anyway. 60 more than you would have otherwise paid anyways, and 20 would come from the original workers. Sorry, 20 would come from you. Sorry, I wasn't clear. I think the point of the Rambam is that not that you kind of double it, whatever it is, but that you only get a deduct from the workers more than what we'd have paid anyways to the workers. So whatever you'd have paid to the workers anyways, that has to come from you. You only get to take from them anything extra, cap.
Well, I agree with that, because that means you're only entitled to recover your net losses, right? What you were going to pay anyway is not a net loss, right?
Right, but what we'd have paid to the original workers if they had kept working, that's not a loss, and that's not taken from them. That's taken from you.
Right. So you're not going to profit from their breach. We're not going to allow you to profit from their breach.
Right.
So I think that would be true for the other Rishonim also, I think. What you're entitled to collect is your losses being anything above what you would have paid anyway. Okay.
Wait, I'm confused. What's that about what Maimon even saying?
He's just saying it's against Rashi. Because Rashi says once you...
I thought he was saying that you have to pay up until the value of the new workers, which could be theoretically more than the value of the original contract.
No, but he's just saying tzrichin lahachzir, whatever you paid the original poelim, they have to disgorge ad kedei sheyuchal lahaskir poelim acherim until you're able to pay your new workers. So first, it's like Rabdosa. First, you satisfy whatever has to be paid to the new workers, and then you could give whatever is remaining to the original workers, right? But Rashi thought if you paid them already, you can't get that back if you pay the original workers. And Gosh Maimon is pointing out the Rambam is against Rashi. Let me just close with this shach, and I think this is what Yoni is referring to earlier, the shach in Shin Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis. Says, Kifi Mashe Sachar Sarishonim, Yachol lehosef laachronim, v'notel me harishonim. So the shach, the way he understands this idea of socher aleihen, is that whatever you were going to pay the first guys, that's you're going to pay them $100. That amount yachol lehosef laachronim. So you could add $100. You could recover $100 worth from the first guys to pay the new guys, but not more than that. So I think the shach is very clear, and he lumps everybody together. He lumps the Zebar Dasa Rambam, Chen Dasa Rosh Vatur. He lumps everybody together here in suggesting that everybody has the same shita except for Rashi, which would rule out Yoni's reading. I would think this rules out Yakir's reading also, because really, if Yakir's reading is right, you could not only recover the principal, the $100 from the Rishonim, you could also recover whatever amount you're going to pay them for the job that they did. But we could talk about that more later on. Yakir,
yeah, I agree with that.
You agree with that, Yakir?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay, good. So this is where I want to, let's stop here. we'll pick up with in the next chabura. We'll talk a little bit about why the liability should be capped at this amount. We saw one formulation in the Sma, but we'll look at the Ramban and the Ritva. We'll talk a little bit about, according to Rashi, why is Rashi's conception of Dabar Ave different from Reb Dosa's regular case of Yad Pala Tachtona. Then I want to try to figure out the difference between these remedies. Why is there a preference between deceiving the Poalim to continue and hiring new workers at their expense, at the expense of the original workers? So you'll see the tour thinks there's a preference for being mate the original workers. And I want to figure out what does that tell us about the nature of the remedies here, the remedy of deception versus the remedy of hiring new workers and imposing the costs. Then I want to figure out what's going on with this exception of Ba Chavil Liyado. And then I want to talk about the kfiya, whether you could compel the workers to continue working. So we'll talk about these other parts of the remedies for Poalim Shechazu B'Davar Aved, and that'll be a wrap for this whole discussion. And then we'll move into the cases of Ones. What happens when a contract is breached for under conditions of duress? And how do we assign responsibility between the two parties? All right? Everyone?